The Santa Barbara Chamber Choir, a Delphos ensemble directed by Temo Coroscelli, presents a program entitled All Angels Cry Aloud, Music for the English Church. Anglican cathedral music featuring the recently appointed organist of Trinity Episcopal Church, Dr. Thomas Joyce. The program will consist of unusual accompanied and a cappella anthems, spanning the historical gamut of sacred music in the Anglican tradition, by the restoration genius Henry Purcell, Maurice Greene, who was master of King's music to George II, the romantic drunkard Samuel Sebastian Wesley, the proper Victorians Hubert Parry and Charles Wood, North American Anglicans Healy Villan and David McWilliams, and modern luminaries Benjamin Britten, W.H. Harris, and Herbert Howells, among others. The splendid neo-Gothic setting of Trinity Episcopal Church in Santa Barbara, with its magnificent pipe organ, provides the perfect setting for this majestic repertoire. And there will be two performances offered. The first on Saturday, June the 6th at 7:30 p.m., and Sunday, June the 7th at 3 p.m., and tickets will be available at the door 30 minutes before the performances. And it is my great pleasure on Direct Talk Radio today to have with me Director Temo Coroscelli.
Thanks for having me.
So, Temo, is it fair to call you an early music expert?
Well, my bar for that is pretty high, so I'm blushing a little on the inside. I think it's fair to say that I have specialized mostly in early music in my music performing and musical scholarship career.
You're closer to what you regard as experts than to us ignorant lay people, I'm sure.
I have a long way to go.
But every year, it seems to me, you've been going to a summer program. Even though it's called Amherst, it's not at Amherst, as I recall.
No longer.
It once was.
It once was. It's a very venerable music workshop specializing in early music, which is medieval, Renaissance, and Baroque. And it began in the late 60s, I think, even at Mount Holyoke College in Western Massachusetts, and kind of moved around for a little bit and then settled at Amherst College, where it resided for about 20 summers. And then starting in 1999, we got on the road again and spent some time at Tufts, at UConn, at Bennington College in Vermont, and then for the past 10 years or so, we've settled at Connecticut College in New London.
Mm. How many people does that festival attract?
It's the largest festival workshop for early music of its kind in the world. We attract about 200 students for each of the one-week sessions, the 2 one-week sessions that it runs for in July. And then on top of that, there are about 60 instructors and an administrative staff of about 15. Mm-hmm. So then there are also, that's for the programs that we run ourselves. Then we also host other programs. The English Country Dance Society meets with us. And then on sort of alternating years, the Historic Brass Society, the Lute Society of America, the Historic Harp Society, meet and have their summer programs in conjunction with us. There's also an instrument makers fair in the middle weekend that attracts 20 to 30 instrument builders and music vendors of various kinds. And that attracts a large audience. And now that we're in New London and easily accessible by the train from metropolitan New York and Boston, we get a large influx on the weekends for our productions and also for this Instrument Makers Fair and other offerings.
So I suppose there's a lot of performances during those 2 weeks. There's maybe master classes.
Right.
Can the public go to lectures?
It's a kind of a mixed bag. The daytime program is mostly set up as a workshop, and so we have enrolled students, whether full time or part time. There's an option for auditors, but most people come and stay in the college dorms and do a full set of 4 classes in a day. Those classes can be large ensembles, small ensembles, individual coachings, masterclass settings, as you described. We also do theatrical productions. So one stream is the Baroque opera production, where they arrive on a Saturday and the following Friday they present a fully costumed production. And of course there's months of preparation behind that. But
right.
And then in the evenings, almost every evening there's a concert, and that's open to the public, as well as to the workshop students. And some of those are performances given by the faculty who are in residence for that week. Some of them are performances given by visiting ensembles that just come and perform for us and for our guests.
Now, when you say you use the pronouns us and we, you're speaking like an administrator. Have you played a role in the...
Yes, yes, I am. So I started going in 1986 or 1987.
Wow.
Was my first year. So I'm coming up on my 30-year anniversary.
Congratulations.
And I made the smart move of asking for work study my first couple years, which is a great way for the students to get to know the inner workings of the festival to a certain extent, and to meet the faculty in a different way, you know, by being stagehands, by being office support, and all kinds of different functions that we need. We try to make it as enriched an environment as we can, and that takes a lot of manpower. And so after a couple of years, I was asked if I would like to join the staff in sort of a junior way, and so I just sort of, you know, worked my way up. I served for about 10 years as the concert manager and stage manager, and for the last 15 or more, I've been the bursar of the festival, which is I'm responsible for all the cash.
Bursar, even that sounds like an old-fashioned word.
Yeah. I don't know how they came up with that. I didn't create the office, but there's a lot of cash and, you know, payments and all kinds of things going in and out, reimbursements, and so I'm responsible for that at the festival. I don't have any responsibility for the larger organization in a treasurer kind of sense,
okay,
or accounting kind of sense, but just managing the cash while we're at the festival. Mm-hmm. I also do a lot of other. I design the T-shirt every year.
Design the T-shirt, or you?
I design the T-shirt.
You do?
I do.
Like a graphic art kind of thing.
Yeah, like the one I'm wearing right now.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Are you yourself an artist?
I don't consider myself an artist. I consider myself to have a good eye.
Yeah. So you find
and I
images.
Play around a little bit, you know, with Photoshop and but I don't. We always use a historic image of some kind, whether a page of music or a graphic having to do with music in some way. And then do the lettering and all that. So I do that. I help with the setup, physical setup. I arrive with the advance team a week before it starts.
It's like 3 weeks or longer.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a 3-week commitment for me for the festival itself, and then I always take a week of recuperation in New York.
Good for
in
you.
Manhattan.
Good
so
for
stay
you.
With friends. And,
yeah. Nice.
More recently, in the last 4 years or so, I've started teaching too. So coaching ensembles and coaching singers, doing a little conducting So
that's fantastic. It sounds like an absolutely essential event for passing on in a living way knowledge that just can't get communicated any other way.
Yeah. There are a number of similar kinds of festivals around or workshops around the country. Some are more specialized than others. Some have a selective small group that they work really intensively. But that whole network is really important, both for forming young professionals, refreshing not so young professionals, but also diffusing this way of making music to the amateur music making population. And that's actually the majority enrollment for us is amateur music makers, recorder players, viola da gamba players, singers,
right?
Retired people, all kinds of things.
Amateur meaning etymologically, people who do it for the love of it.
Right.
We're not talking about financial compensation, even from the bursar.
Even from the bursar.
You look like the banking type. I would have given you that job.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Wall Street, for sure.
Yes, very buttoned down.
That is Santa Barbara's own Adelphos Ensemble, under the direction of Temmo Corshelli, singing a composition by member baritone Michael Bland, In the Spring of the Year. You are tuned to KCSB FM Santa Barbara. The program is Direct Talk Radio, interviews with artists and directors in the performing arts, a special spoken word feature of the Classical Now. Adelphos director Temmo Corshelli is my guest this week. I asked him next about the title of the upcoming program, All Angels Cry Aloud, Music for the English Church. Is it true that angels cry aloud? Don't they also laugh aloud?
I don't know. I don't know if we know that angels laugh or not, at least in the Christian tradition.
Uh-huh.
That's angels cry aloud is a line from a very old liturgical hymn of thanksgiving called the Te Deum, which is called that because it starts in Latin, Te Deum laudamus, we praise you, O God. And one of the lines is, to thee all angels cry aloud, the heavens and all the powers therein. So,
which is they cry, meaning they call. No. Mm-hmm.
Right, they don't weep aloud.
Weep aloud.
Right. They yell aloud.
We've kind of lost that sense of cry. It doesn't get used so much, it seems.
Well, language does change. I mean, like music. Language changes, and you can either just, you know, forget, live in the present and forget about older meanings, or you can have sort of an enriched view and live with multiple meanings.
And, yes, and risk being misunderstood when you...
Yeah.
Use those terms. So tell me about the organist, Dr. Thomas Joyce,
mm-hmm.
and how you met him and how you came up with this program.
Well, how I met him, go back a little bit. When I turned 40, I was braced for some kind of feelings of midlife crisis or something, mm-hmm. and I sort of thought I knew what that might mean, and so I was that's what I was braced for. But none of that I was expecting happened, and instead, something totally unexpected happened, which was that I felt kind of suddenly and very strongly that I wasn't doing enough with myself.
Mm.
And so I'm not in a position to be a great philanthropist, and so I thought, well, I have some administrative skills or office kind of skills and some time. And so I started offering myself as a volunteer to certain organizations that were around, nearby, but might need my help. And so I got involved with the Honor Society Phi Beta Kappa, which has a chapter at UCSB. So now I'm the secretary of that. And I also got involved with the local chapter of the American Guild of Organists. Because I've been a church musician for a long time, although I'm only a poor organist myself. But my mom was an organist, and we don't have a larger church musicians union or something. So I thought, well, to address some of the issues that face church musicians in their working life, let me get involved with that. So, well, as things transpired, I'm now the dean of this chapter, the Santa Barbara chapter of the American Guild of Organists. So when David Gell, who was the organist incumbent at Trinity Episcopal downtown for decades, suddenly, unexpectedly and tragically died in his sleep. And so Trinity really was scrambling to find somebody, and they had to reassess what they could afford, and, you know, there were all kinds of things. So the local AGO chapter got a little bit involved with that, was aware of that, and We were hoping that they would find someone who would might be able to add for some fresh energy to our chapter, which is unfortunately aging and shrinking. The position of organ playing in our society is a precarious one right now. And unfortunately.
Because it's hard to recruit new talent into that.
Well, it's there are a number of things. Part of it is our trends, or former trends, I should say, in church music itself, mm-hmm. Towards praise bands and
yes.
other more vernacular kinds of worship music.
Vernacular or vulgar? Oh, sorry, never mind.
Well.
I meant in the old sense of the
yes,
word.
Of the people.
Nothing to do with disgust.
Of course, now, you know, like with all trends, trends change. And so now many churches are moving away from that. But there's a lag. You know, people stopped studying organ. It sort of went out of fashion. UCSB used to have an organ program up through the masters,
yes.
which they discontinued in the 90s.
On the fabulous Flintrop.
That's right, yeah.
What was the name of that organist who...
James Welch.
James Welch, yes. Yeah. I interviewed him. He came back.
Who used to be at Trinity Episcopal.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Oh.
And so anyway, now what we're trying to do is find a way to get to connect people who play piano with some basic organ skills so that they can at least function as substitute organists in churches who are willing to pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a supply.
That's what James Wells said. He tells young people, this is good employment. You would have a job
yes.
for sure.
Yes. I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
I'm always, you know, now I'm also not only the dean, I'm also the secretary of the chapter. And so all the requests from churches for, you know, we need this person, we need someone to fill, and that all comes through me. There's
wow.
a lot of those.
Wow.
You know, and we are starting to see some UCSB piano graduate students learning to play.
Okay.
And, you know, supplementing their income that way.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so that's how I, and then Tom Joyce was selected by Trinity and moved here, and then
moved
I heard
here
him
from
San Francisco,
okay,
or the Bay Area.
But he's English originally.
Originally, he was English. He and his family came to the United States when he was small, and he had a fabulous musical upbringing. He was a boy chorister at the National Cathedral in Washington D.C., and then he went to Oberlin. And then he got his doctorate in organ performance at University of Washington. And so we're really lucky to have him.
Wow.
And when I sent him we had talked about collaborating and he agreed. And so then when I sent him the packet of scores, he wrote me back very excitedly. He said, "Oh, I'm so looking forward to playing. I know all these pieces, and some of them I've known since I was a child."
Wow.
So we're lucky to have that.
Fantastic.
In town. And he's also, he teaches piano, he teaches voice, he coaches music. He's a wonderful all-around musician, and he's doing a lot for the music program at Trinity, too.
I'm speaking right now with Temmo Coroscelli, the director of the Adelphos Ensemble, who will be performing Saturday, June 6th and Sunday, June 7th, 7:30 p.m. on Saturday night, 3 p.m. on Sunday afternoon, with a program called All Angels Cry Aloud, Music for the English Church. And this is a collaboration with Dr. Thomas Joyce, the recently appointed organist with Trinity Episcopal Church. How does this program rank with, in your own mind, in your own heart, with other Adelphos programs that you've done? And don't give me that creative answer of the next program is always the favorite.
No, I wouldn't say the next program is always the favorite. I mean, I hope the next program is always going to be good.
Right.
But no, some of them are. This music is very close to my heart. I grew up Episcopalian, which is, of course, the American version of the Church of England, in roughly speaking. Mm-hmm. And then that fledgling identity was very much enhanced when I spent 2 years at a historically Anglican college in Halifax, Nova Scotia, in Canada.
Mm. Where my grandpa's from.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. It's a wonderful province. And they had a very active chapel, and I was a choral scholar in the chapel choir, and they also had a very close relationship with the Anglican Cathedral in Halifax, where I sang in the cathedral choir. And so I learned tons about that tradition from those 2 years of experience. And then ever since I came back to finish my bachelor's at UCSB, and then eventually I went on to graduate school here too, I've been employed in the Episcopal Church and as a church musician, so it's very, very near and dear to my heart, this repertoire.
I'm sure. How many singers? Let's see, you've been directing Adelphos since 2008, I think?
I think that's right.
So that's like 7 years ago, according to the new math. How is it? Tell me about the group this season. And is it, I mean, you've had a stable core, you know, from the start. There's some musicians that are in the group, some singers that have been there since 2004 when the group began.
That's right. That's right. So it, as you know, because you were in it for a while, it began as a men's group. And it was, it began in the sort of informal way, and it was initially shepherded by Dr. Michael Eglin, who's a composer and church musician here in town, and teaches at City College. And he likes to describe it as a drinking group with a singing problem. And there was a lot of urge to get away from girlfriends and wives and spend some male bonding time together. I was not really involved with the group at the outset, but after 4 years or so, he had three small children under the age of four, I think, at that time, and a lot of job responsibilities, and he just felt he couldn't continue to lead it, and so he asked me if I would take it over from him, because he didn't want to let it just fall apart. And I having nothing else to do, and feeling I really prize loyalty and continuity, and so the idea of this lovely ensemble fading away was just because I, if I had refused to take it, was sort of too much to bear. So I took it over, but I did have a talk with the members at the time to see how they felt about me taking it over. And specifically, one of the things that I didn't think I could continue was the programming style. The programming style had been very eclectic and diverse, which has its positives, but to me, devising a program, I always want there to be a theme. And that's basically what I wanted to see if that was okay with them or if they really liked the constant diversity. Mm-hmm. But they said, you know, we'll give it a chance. We'll see how you do. And I think it went pretty well. We continued for about another 3 or 4 years as a men's group. But then there were there was kind of a generational or like a, you know, a turning over of several people in the group, moving away, getting married, some life changes like that. And it just didn't look like it was going to be feasible to continue it, to have a balanced ensemble of just men. Mm. So I proposed to them that we make it a mixed group. And there were a couple people who said, well, you know, we're not really interested in being a part of if it moves in that direction. And so they, you know, left no rancor there or anything. Mm-hmm. But I think it's been a good change, and it certainly it opens up a much wider world of programming possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because you can still do men's chorus music or women's chorus music, but you can also there's the whole vast world of mixed music. We're so lucky to have our accompanist, Roy Spicer, who's the parish musician at the Mission. And he's our rehearsal accompanist, but he's also a fine baritone. And so when we do the a cappella things, or in this case with this program, because Tom Joyce is playing, so he'll be one of our singers. So
oh, fantastic.
Augmenting the baritone section.
Fantastic.
So,
yeah. And we should say, many of the singers in the group are some of Santa Barbara's most experienced singers. They do double and triple duty in other choirs and church ensembles.
Yep.
And you know it. I mean, I can say as a critic who've been to a number of your concerts, it really, it's to say it's first-rate singing is doesn't do it justice.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, well, it's fantastic.
It is. It puts us in a kind of a peculiar position because we are an all-volunteer group, and so everybody who's in the group has a very strong commitment to it. At the same time, most of them, or many of them, are trying to make it as freelance musicians.
Yeah.
And so when the opera chorus is rehearsing, or when Choral Society has a concert, or their church obligations conflict, Adelphos is the group that has to take the second place to those other commitments.
Financial realities, yeah.
And that's just, you know, one of the things I like about Santa Barbara, I've been here a long time, is the level, the quantity of artistic expression that's attempted here. But at the same time, we have to remember it's not a large place. The pool is limited. And so I have to bear in mind that, you know, there aren't an infinite number of first tenors or whatever that you can just pull from. to make the group, and we have to sort of give people their space and keep them happy.
If you're just tuning in, this is Joseph Miller with Direct Talk Radio, and my guest today is Temo Coroscelli, director of the Adelphos Ensemble. And Adelphos will be performing on June 6th, Saturday night at 7:30 p.m., and Sunday, June 7th at 3 p.m. Tickets will be available at the door. It's at Trinity Episcopal Church on the corner of State Street and Mitchell Terrain, I want to say.
That's right. That's right.
And it will be a program of music for the English Church and featuring Trinity Episcopal Church's new organist, Dr. Thomas Joyce. So when you get an idea like this music, does it, I mean, when you're approaching once a season that's out of your way and the other one's coming up, do you already know, when do you know what you're, because you're so good at choosing programs and themes. How does a theme strike you? Does it, is it like a beam of sunlight that hits you while you're crossing the street, or, you know?
I'd have to say there's no one mechanism. In some cases, I have kind of a prospective list of possible themes.
Waiting in the wings, like airplanes waiting to land at LAX.
Right, you know, not necessarily at all fleshed out as to the individual pieces, but just kind of ideas. And often that will come because I hear a particular piece or I remember having done a particular piece and I think, oh, maybe that, you know, could be the kernel of something. And what would the theme be? Would it be about that instrumentation? Other pieces with that similar instrumentation, or different settings of the same poet, or the same kind of poetry, or with the same thematic, like the ocean program,
right? Which was great. I love that concert.
Thank you. So they're different. It comes to me in different ways, and then I work on them a while. I'm very lucky. I work at the music library at UCSB as a cataloger and a supervisor, and so that gives me access to, you know, worldwide databases of music, and I can just sort of search around and see what's available and see what's in print and
off the clock, of course. We
of
want
course.
To say yes.
Yes.
Right.
And I can, you know, if I want to preview a score, I can get it through interlibrary loan. So I'm wonderfully situated for doing this kind of work. And some themes don't pan out. You know, it seems like a good idea, and then like, well, there's not enough of that kind of piece, or it turns out to be too hard, or...
And hopefully that before rehearsal.
Oh, yeah, long before.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, and just in that, like, I'm thinking now about what we might do next spring. So, you try to sort of get a rolling calendar, you know, of looking ahead and trying out different things with plenty of time to change course if need be.
I'm looking at a list of the prospective program coming up here, and I'm wondering how many of these songs were actually part of liturgy, and how many of them are more like art songs, and
These are all, well, almost all. These composers were church composers. Now, sometimes they were also composers of other kinds of music.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they were also composition professors, in some cases, or wrote for the BBC, different kinds of things. But they... these are not the music that we're doing is not music intended for the concert hall,
okay.
and then transplanted into it. It was these are pieces intended to be used in various services.
Okay.
It's the liturgical assignments in the Anglican tradition are not as strict as they are in the Catholic liturgy, and so it's not always you can't always say, oh, this is for this particular Sunday in Advent or whatever. Mm. But many of them are settings of direct settings of verses from the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Some are narrative, some are poetic. So they relate to the liturgy in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And some are on great poems from the English literature tradition.
Okay.
And some are very standard, directly liturgical, like there's a Te Deum on there. Mm-hmm. There's a Nunc Dimittis, which is from the end of Evensong. So there's a variety of different things.
Seems like it's, speaking of variety, you can do some interesting combinations with once you bring the organ in.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, that's one of the, it's most choirs rehearse with piano, and it's very, piano is wonderful for helping you with the rhythm, because it's basically a percussion instrument.
Yeah.
But the color palette available especially in a large pipe organ like they have it at Trinity, is it's almost orchestral,
mm-hmm.
and so or symphonic, and so there are all kinds of different combinations, and that's actually a whole area of organ study, is what they call registration, choosing the different sounds,
mm-hmm.
not only the different individual sounds, but how they combine.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same as in orchestration studies for composers, mm-hmm. who write for orchestras. You know, if you have the flute and the oboe playing at the same time, you get the same notes. You know, you get a combined timbre that is not flute or oboe, but something else.
Right.
And some of the most interesting composers, like Ravel, Stravinsky, Mendelssohn, to a certain extent, were people who explored new combinations of instruments within the orchestra to get these new tone colors.
Now, I suppose there's an approach to registration that's specific to working with a choir. Maybe?
There is. There are times when you want to just support the choir,
mm-hmm.
And not add any additional or not add sounds that draw your attention towards the organ and away from the choir. There's a whole variety of families of different kinds of pipes.
Things not to do.
Right.
I suppose from a singer's standpoint, it might almost be like you have a new member or two. The organ becomes a voice or voices.
Right.
And you hear yourselves differently, and you hear the pieces you've been working on differently.
Right. You might hear some things better, like the supporting, because it's a sustaining instrument,
right.
You might hear the supporting harmonies better and find your place better. But at the same time, if you're used to hearing the sort of sharp cueing of a piano,
right,
and you don't hear that attack,
mm-hmm.
then it can throw you off rhythmically. Or
does that mean you have to play a more obvious role as conductor?
In some ways, yeah. I mean, you always want piano or no, you want the choir to follow the conductor and not the pianist. Hopefully everybody is following the conductor. But yeah, there's more visual cueing and somewhat less aural cueing.
Mm-hmm.
One more point about registration. There are not only styles of registering an organ to to accompany a choir, but they're also national styles. They're ways of making, you know, there's sort of the, an English style, a French style, a Spanish style, German style. And so that's one of the what I'm really looking, one of the things I'm really looking forward to with working with Tom is his deep steeping in the English style and really bringing that element to this English music that we're doing.
How far in advance do you start? Do the singers start working with the organ?
This for this program, we are going to only have a week. And in that week, we'll have three rehearsals. Mm-hmm.
But you guys are pros. Scary, a scary thought for me, but you guys are pros.
Adelphos Ensemble, singing the late John Taverner's setting of Love Bade Me Welcome, a poem by Welsh-born English poet and Anglican priest George Herbert. I asked Temmo about choral settings of English mystical poets.
Yes, there were a lot of, in the earlier 20th century, well, and throughout the 20th century, there was a real interest on the part of English choral composers to set poetry by mystical poets like Donne, like Sir Philip Sidney, mm-hmm. Like George Herbert.
Mm-hmm. George Herbert, yes.
So Vaughan Williams did a number of Herbert settings. Unfortunately, we're not doing any of those, but that's sort of a whole kind of compositional partnership.
These composers, were some of them prominent organists or primarily known as organists?
None of them were primarily known as organists, but a number of them were organists. Samuel Sebastian Wesley, who was sort of a contemporary of, what would you say, Mendelssohn, maybe, was a cathedral organist, although he was the one who was the drunkard. He went from job to job. He didn't last very long anywhere. Philip Moore was the organist at one of the big English cathedrals in the 70s and 80s, 1970s and 80s. Mm. And a lot of them played organ. Green in the 18th century played organ. Healy Whillan was an interesting case. He was an Englishman who took a job starting in the 30s in Toronto. And so he went out to the colonies and at St. Mary Magdalene in Toronto and basically single-handedly built the whole Canadian Anglican choral and organ tradition.
He was
there for like 50 years.
His compositions were ravishing.
And his playing was very famous.
You know, as a choral singer with Canticle, I used to be so struck by his compositions. And I didn't really research who he was. I mean, with a name like Healy Whillan, I didn't know what century, what it was. And I always assumed he was much older.
Yes. He adopted that kind of a neo-Gregorian sort of like Durafle in a way.
Tremendously moving pieces to sing.
Yes.
Yeah, it's Hodier. I remember when that gets played a lot. Yeah. Hmm. Different styles, different moods, different.
A lot of these pieces are grand.
Yes.
And that's a mode of English cathedral music that I like a lot. But others are more intimate or more. More somber. So I kind of wanted the progress of the pieces to sort of follow the progress of a Eucharist service. Oh. So there's sort of an entrate kind of part, a proclamatory beginning, and then it gets a little bit more there's some psalm settings and some more like there would be readings,
right.
Scripture readings,
right.
and then it gets a little penitential. And then there's a hosanna and a sort of a like a sanctus kind of, you know, like a consecration kind
right.
of moment,
mm-hmm.
And then sort of a communion interior meditative section, and then a big ending.
Oh, nice. Nice.
And I also wanted to have some variety. There will be a lot of variety in the organ settings, but I wanted there to be another kind of variety, so there are pieces throughout that are unaccompanied and just the choir, which is sort of like the, to change metaphors, is like the sorbet, you know, palate cleanser between these rich, almost royal, some of them are almost royal, if not downright royal. A few of these are pieces from coronation services and royal wedding kind of stuff.
And the and there'll be looks like some solo organ.
Mm-hmm. Yes, also.
Mm. It sure would be great if Adelphos could tour.
It would. This is one of the when I was speaking earlier about us kind of existing around the margins of other groups and of other and people's day jobs. This is one of the constraints that we're under, is coordinating the schedules of 16 people who are all still working and you know, multiple jobs, some of them. And
it's like, you know, the need for a grant, the need for a sugar daddy or sugar mama who recognizes the value of
that,
what you're doing. That's the thing, is it's, you are also gifted. You're doing something very unique. You put heart and soul and intelligence into it. Really, you are on the mark as for, you know, as for really an important classical music contribution to Santa Barbara. But what is it? Is it that choral music is more obscure in some ways still, or it's not the first classical entertainment that the public goes for, maybe? I don't know. Or people have misunderstandings about... I mean, I know when I sang choral music, people had misunderstandings about what choir music was, and they still thought it was, you know, sort of their church choir experience, sing-along kind of stuff.
And
they don't realize the discipline. It's like a voicestra, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I'm sure there are answers buried in our sort of social past, musically in this country, because I don't think it's like this everywhere in the world. Right. I think in some countries, choral music has greater pride of place. Mm-hmm. Maybe not greater than instrumental music anywhere, but at least greater than it does here. And it might have to do with the amateur choral tradition, which people enjoy doing, but the emphasis was on the joy of doing it rather than the craft and fineness of presenting it to an audience. Yeah, and you know, as far as us reaching a wider audience, as Adelphos reaching a wider audience, I think what we would like to try to begin with is reaching a wider regional audience. Mm-hmm. And we've done some performances in Los Olivos in the past. We weren't able to do that this time because the St. Mark's in the Valley, which is our venue in Los Olivos, is under renovation right now, so we weren't able to do that. But we've looked into doing that, or up in San Luis County, or down in Ventura or Ojai, you know, places that we could do a day trip,
right?
And
especially once you work so hard to come up with a program, you know. I mean, I think of Camerata Pacifica.
Mm-hmm.
They do their string of six concerts or something from Zipper Hall and the Huntington up through Ventura and Santa Barbara every month during their active season. It sure would be nice if you guys could swing the other way and end up down at the Huntington or something.
Mm-hmm.
You need a promoter.
We do, but we also need to coordinate our schedules.
That's the hard thing.
I mean, for a while, we were giving our concerts on Tuesday nights because that's our rehearsal night, and that's the only night that everybody was free.
Yeah.
So at least we're now on the weekend, and it's a more normal kind of performance time. But yeah, we're inching our way forward.
This is Joseph Miller. You've been listening to Direct Talk Radio. My guest today is Temokor Shelley, director of Adelphos Ensemble. Adelphos will be singing on Saturday night, June 6th at 7:30 p.m., Sunday afternoon, June 7th at 3 p.m. at Trinity Episcopal Church at State Mitchell Terena. It will be a program of music for the English Church, a collaboration with Dr. Thomas Joyce, newly appointed organist for Trinity Episcopal. And it has been a pleasure to speak with you today, Temo. I'm so glad to have an extended conversation with you and learn a little bit more about your background and your what you take into consideration when you come up with these wonderful programs for Adelphos. Really looking forward to the concert.
Thanks very much. It's been a pleasure to be here.